Today's episode is brought to you by Radcasters Podcasting School. If you've ever thought about starting a podcast, but perhaps you don't think you have enough time, you think you have to spend a whole lot of money on expensive gear, or you're a bit scared, or you don't think you have enough time, then I've got a bit of something that I've put together for you. Through my teaching and mentoring in Radcasters Podcasting School, helping people get their show live in iTunes, I've come to discover that there's four key things or four key hurdles that people put up between them and the clear path to podcast success. And I've created a four-part video series which covers them all and what you can do about them. So if you're interested, head on over to Radcasters and sign up for our newsletter, and I'll see you in your inbox. Today's interview is with Kirsten Roberts, and Kirsten and I met, well, I don't think we had any other choice in the matter, to be honest. At the time, we had about four different friends, mutual friends, kind of introduce us to each other, and it just got a bit fucking weird, actually. In the end, I was visiting my parents in Barwon Heads. Kirsten had recently moved there, and I had organised to catch up with my mate Nikki Smith. And Nikki had said to me, oh, do you mind if I invite this girl, Kirsten Roberts? And I was just like, oh my God, you're fucking kidding me. Invite her. I have to meet her now. This is just way too weird. So that morning we had breakfast. It was chaotic to say the least. Mabel fell off a table, bumped her head, ended up with a big egg on her head. And while that was happening, Kirsten's son went missing. And it was chaos. But there was something there. There was something there. I knew that I really liked this chick and that we would, you know, continue on with the friendship. So this is the next evolution of the friendship. I am proud to introduce you to the absolutely radical Kirsten Roberts. Welcome to Carlosophy's Stories Behind Success. I'm Carly Nimmo. It's so easy to fall into comparisonitis as an entrepreneur, and it can be paralyzing. In my own journey, I've come to understand that regardless of your level of success, fame, or fortune, we're all suffering from the same stories of fear, struggle, and failure. So let's talk about it.
So you won't believe this, but straight out of uni, I was an auditor with Ernst & Young. And I put on my suit every day, and I had my leather briefcase that I would carry off. And I had, back then when we were auditors, it wasn't really done on computers. It was lots of highlighters and different coloured pens. The stereotype was true. And I went and played with the accountants and pretended to be an accountant for a while, and soon worked out that I didn't fit there. But that feeling of that I didn't fit there lasted for so many years into proper adulthood, and when I stopped pretending to be an adult and became a real adult and a parent to multiple children, when you feel like you become even more of a real adult. And for so long I was looking for the place where I felt content, where I felt settled, that's probably the word. And it took me until I was 40 and lots of different corporate jobs and lots of different playing the games and lots of different delivering really cool outcomes for other people, but never feeling like I was quite good enough, to come to the point where I went, hey, this is me. This is my business from the soul. This is my calling. And it's not too late at 40 to find your dreams and your passion. It's just the right time for when it gets to you.
Yeah, totally.
And that's how I've got to this place at nearly 42. Oh, actually, I just turned 42 last week. I forgot about that.
Happy birthday.
Thanks, man. I spent it on a plane from Bali back to Melbourne. And it is just wonderful to know, or to trust, that no matter what age you are, how stuck you feel, if you've got a dream and a desire that's greater than where you are right now, if you feel like inside of you you want more and you can be more and you can, you know there's more there, but you just can't touch it. It's just shrouded at the moment. It is okay, and you will get there, and you can get there. It's just your perfect journey.
Totally. So let's go back in time and let's talk about the journey that led you to, I guess, your tipping point. Did you just wake up on your 40th birthday and go, fuck, I got to change something here? Or how did that kind of unfold?
It sort of started before that. So I had a business. So I played corporate game for ages, did a couple of master's degrees. And then in my second master's degrees, it had a really strong entrepreneurial bent. And I went, hell yeah, that's me. And I went out and bought a business. I went out and bought Spud Bar, which is a fast, healthy food franchise in Melbourne and across Australia and in New Zealand. It was back then. And so I went, yep, cool, I can do this. I've got two master's degrees. I'm really smart. I've always consulted to business. I am awesome. And so I started with that business in 2007 as CEO and co-owner. My daughter was 6 months old, my second child. Fuck, it was, oh, am I allowed to swear?
Yeah, dude.
Awesome! it was a baptism of fire. I was running so hard and trying to keep my head above water and trying to keep cash flow coming in. And when you run a franchise system, you've got, if you think of all these people have made an investment in their business as big as the investment they've made in their house, you know, that's how much there is at stake for them. And they are looking to you to be their guide, to get them out of trouble, to solve their shit, to be the magic bullet for them. And it is a full-on job. Like, it's a massive job. We made some great inroads. We got a couple of stores in at the MCG, which was massive for our brand. I brought on partners who were really high profile in the retail space. We did all these big rebrandings. We extended the business. But I was burning myself out. I was running so hard, trying to do so much, and going through a lot of personal shit at the same time. So when I stepped away from the business in 2010 after being in hospital, sort of burnout combined with infertility, combined with IVF, combined with my husband's family going through some pretty big cancer stuff. And I just went, you know, I can't do this anymore. I've got to step away. And we lost a lot of money and I lost a lot of confidence. Mm. And we lost the money because I wasn't there for the equity to take off, you know, all this stuff we'd put in. So I had no confidence, zero bank balance, basically. We were starting again. And thankfully I was pregnant with my third child by this time and it was touch and go with him. It was just a horrible time in our lives. So coming out of that period in 2011, I was a shell of my former self. I was broken. We were, God, I'm going to get emotional talking about it now. We were, Stu's parents were diagnosed with terminal cancer a day after each other. His dad died a month later. His mum died a year later and we were her primary carers. She lived with us through the last year. When it came time to go back to work after June had died, after we had Mac and I'd had some time at home with him, I was lost. Like, I wasn't sure what I could do. I wasn't sure what value I could add. Christ, if I can't even run this business, then how the hell can I go and go to a business and say I can do this? So somehow I still look back in wonder and awe. I actually got the courage to go and pitch to a couple of big companies. Went and pitched to the head of small business at PwC about how I can change how they work. I don't know where the confidence came from at that point in time, the gumption, given I was so broken. And I also did that with a company called Crow Haworth, where I ended up joining and setting up their consulting arm in one of their regions. The reason I give you that backstory is because my turning point was them offering me a partnership principle, they call it in their terminology. And I took it because of stability. Oh, it's good money coming in. We know it's safe. You know, all these things that corporate refugees or people thinking of taking the leap from corporate shit themselves about. Safe money. You know, perhaps I can do it for a few years, build up some more cash reserves and go and do my thing. You know, I've got leave, it's easy. And so these were all the things that were going through my mind and I accepted the job. I went to my first principal meeting, hadn't formally started in the role. And it was my massive turning point where I was in a room with a bunch of people who had no innovation in them, were really focused on maintaining the status quo and keeping their jobs safe and getting their bonus than delivering awesome value for clients or being really creative in how you can deliver things or just being innovative. And it was a massive wake-up call. I walked out and I went, I can't do this. I'm compromising my soul. And I went home and said to Stu, I just can't do it. And we'd agonized over the decision for me to accept it because I knew it was a compromise inside me, but we thought the benefits were bigger. And so it was at that point that I went and I was 39 maybe, that I went, no, I can't do it. And I basically resigned and left pretty quickly and started up this business pretty well straight away with very little cash reserves. We were still catching up. Nothing but the belief really that I was like, fuck compromising myself. I am selling my soul and I am not going to live that way anymore. I don't want to die, you know, with lots of money in the bank account, but as miserable as shit saying I've wasted my life. I want to see what I'm made of. I want to live to my potential. I want to create the impact like I dream of, and I'm putting it on the line to do it. And that's just what I did.
Yeah, cool. I find that concept so interesting and maybe a little bit foreign because, you know, I too am a corporate refugee. However, for me, that happened in my mid-20s. I kind of was looking around me at 25, I think, and I was just like, oh, my God, I'm surrounded by miserable middle-aged men. This really fucking sucks. Do I want to be doing this for the rest of my life? Hell no. You know, so then I went and worked in radio and tried a few things and that didn't work out so well. I kind of realized that I'm not really cut out for working for other people, particularly because I just feel like it in the environments that I was working, innovation, you know, I'm an ideas person and that was squashed out because, you know, it's like stick to the status quo. These are the rules, you know, like, but they were always with the carrot of me being able to make big change within, you know, the work environment. And then the carrot was actually never real, you know. So then I was kind of stuck there. Anyway, the interesting thing is that, you know, I've toed and froed, but I mean, in my mid-20s, it's kind of a little bit different because I don't really have much in the way of responsibilities. I had rent at the time. You know, I think actually at that point in time, I'd broken up with a boyfriend and I was living at home. So I didn't even have that, you know, so I was like, it's very easy to make those huge life decisions that you're just going to leave one career, at 25 while you're still living under the roof of your parents' house. But it's a very different scenario when you have a few children and a mortgage and, you know, all these responsibilities. So I imagine that would have been a really super hard decision to make. But then also easy in some respects too.
Yeah, and it wasn't a hard decision at the time because I'd seen the other side. I'd said yes to the hard decision was saying yes to the other side of taking that principal role. And then when I'd stepped in there, it was like, get me the fuck out of here. But I'd also made big decisions and big changes early in the career. Like I went from being an auditor with Ernst & Young, like this is my career projection, I went from being an auditor with Ernst & Young into IT, high-end IT solutions that run big business. And I worked my way up from implementations into business. So actually going in and, you know, process engineering businesses and putting the software in to support it, into pre-sales, which is demonstrating it to big businesses, to selling it. Then from there, I went and did management consulting for a while. And then I ran Spud Bar. And then I set up a consulting. Like I was making changes left, right and center and investing money too. Like Spud Bar, we invested quite a bit of money because I was always looking for more. Like I really struggled to just stay with the status quo. So making that big leap wasn't as big. In hindsight, I put a fuckload of pressure on our family because there was no room for error. And I was desperate to get out. I've always been impatient. What I really encourage women now to do is to actually get clear on how they're going to make money to start with. Like who is our first client that we're going to take on board? how can we, so for instance, there's one lady at the moment who's sort of working on leaving her corporate banking career and to help small businesses really understand their numbers, their financial numbers, and to make decisions off them and give them the insight so they can go home and sleep easy at night rather than panicking the whole time about, you know, where's the next dollar coming from. And what the approach we're working on with her is, let's get clear on who your client is. And let's get a couple of clients on board, like go part-time, get a couple of clients on board, get the confidence in your process, get some cash coming in, and then take that step.
Yeah.
And it's a much, when you've got responsibilities of children and kids and mortgage, it's a much smoother transition and it's less stressful on everybody. I'm not saying don't do it like me. I'm just saying that's not the only way, and that when you feel like that's too much, then there is much smoother ways to make that progression into your business from the soul.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, even back in those days when I was living under my parents' roof, and, you know, it was still a very difficult decision to make because I'd kind of worked to the point where I could see the end game in that particular industry because I kind of rocketed myself at that stage and I could see the end game, and it was just like, well, is that what I actually really, really want? No, it's not. And even though I didn't have, you know, the mortgage and the kids and all that kind of jazz to really think about, it was still a huge decision, you know, and one that took a lot of thought. And, you know, I didn't just go, oh, I'm quitting my job, bye-bye. Because at that time, I also packed everything up and I moved to Byron Bay. So for love. And so I had left everything that I knew behind to start this new life. I didn't have the safety net of living at my parents' house there. You know, I was working in radio, which paid just atrociously, living in one of the most expensive parts of Australia. It was a big decision. And then later down the track, when I decided to start Killer Copy, I actually kept a bridge job. And I had a job that I kept until I was ready to take that final leap. And you do the way that it
Yeah, and
works.
the job's an interesting thing in a way as well, because it can be the velvet coffin is what I call it. So, you know, you've got these dreams to go from, I call it from a business wannabe to a business rock star. So a business wannabe is, you know, it's that chick who's got these dreams and really would love to go and take that step to go into a business. But, you know, because in a corporate thing, you know, your personal development's always paid for. You know, you get so much paid for that you're not used to paying money to invest in yourself and not, or invest in your own learning or invest in your business, for instance, because that's just covered in the corporate world. So like a business wannabe is sort of the person who can't take that step to put their money in the pocket and back themselves and invest in themselves for learning, invest in their business infrastructure or technology or what might it be. And a business rock star is those ones who will make that investment in time, in money, who will actually say, okay, I'm going to go part-time to give myself the opportunity to get some customers in the door and do that. So I'm sort of transitioning my way out. They're taking the steps, they're investing. Now, the velvet coffin can be, a job can be awesome, but it can also be this, what I call the velvet coffin, because it's really easy not to push the boundaries. And the business wannabes who are saying, when I get all this happening, then I'll leave my job or then I'll go part-time, or when I get enough money under my belt, then I'll make the decision to go part-time in the future. Those sorts of things are, it's so easy to not push the boundaries, to not get really uncomfortable in growing, to not put yourself out there, because that can be hard, putting yourself out there and saying, hey, I can help you. It's really easy to stay safe. When you don't have that, you know, that gut-wrenching pressure of, Jesus, I've really got to make this business work because my family's depending on it, my sanity is depending on it, then, you know, we can be, it can keep us really stuck. And I call it the velvet coffin because it's like, oh, it's nice and cozy in here. I might just stay here, but you're stuck in this confined place.
Yeah, there's no room for growth.
Yeah, it's a bit of a catch-22. So you've got to get to a point, even in that transition, where you feel slightly sick about it, is my view, because then you work really hard to make that business happen. You work really hard to overcome those fears and obstacles that are in your way.
For sure. So who were you as a kid? What kind of kid were you?
Oh, wow. Good question. I haven't been asked that one before. I was the all-rounder, and I actually won best all-rounder in year 12, at year 12 graduation. So it's interesting how I look back now in hindsight. So as a kid, I was the person who, the kid who looked like it had it all together. I was pretty good at sport. I played netball for Victoria. I was on junior school council. I held down multiple jobs. I got good grades. I wasn't the smartest, but I got good grades. Like, life came pretty easy to me, and I jammed a lot into it. And, you know, it was always expected I'd go to uni and I'd go and get a good job. And I think that's part of why it took me so long to find myself as well, is that this is sort of the expectation of the path, more that mum and dad didn't go that path, as opposed to, you know, they were doctors, so they expected me to be doctors. When I look back now, and I've done a lot of work on my mindset, and I help women a lot with their mindset now as well, in terms of the reason they show up the way they do as adults, I did everything for everybody and showed up as trying to be the best I could in all these different facets of my life, because I was trying to prove a point. I was trying to prove that I was good enough, and that I was, that, you know, that I was lovable enough, and that, yeah, basically I was just worthy enough by being, did everything. And I continued that through my adulthood. And, you know, it's only in the last sort of 18 months that I've recognized this and really set about changing that view of myself, that I've got to show up the way I think I should be showing up for everybody else, which means as an adult, being on school council, being the basketball coach, getting my kids into the best therapists, being a connected mum as well as this awesome businesswoman. Like, you know, and basically nearly killing yourself in the process trying to think you've got to show up this way all the time. So I had a good childhood, but it's interesting when I reflect on it now, it's like, oh, I can see all these patterns showing up even as a kid.
Mm. The onion, isn't it? It's like an onion. I've just been doing some amazing work on shifting beliefs with a guy that I was working with to get his podcast up, and and just peeling away some layers. There were some, you know, beliefs there that I just, they had become my truth, and I couldn't actually see that they weren't true until, you know, kind of played around in my brain a little bit. And I just recorded a podcast on this today, actually, bringing together what was a truth with actually what is the truth. Anyway, that sounds kind of a little bit too crazy, but, you know, like, there is always the truth, and then there's the actual truth, you know. And I think sometimes we have, like, these crazy stories that we've created throughout our childhood about our parents, about the way society sees us, about the way we should behave, about who we are, that they actually are kind of our truth, unless we do that peeling back the onion kind of work, which is painful at the best of times.
It is the most, and it's the most important thing, I feel, for your audience who are looking to make that transition to building a business from the soul, to building a business rock star. So whether they're corporates looking to make the leap, or whether they've already transitioned into business and are floundering and not connecting and feeling like a failure, or they've got comparitis and look around and don't think they're good enough, the beliefs as to why do we not charge our true value? Why do we think we need a certificate to prove that we're good enough to offer this particular service, even though it might be what we've done in corporate for 20 years? You know, why do we compare ourselves all the time and not feel good enough compared to all these people who show up in a shiny way on social media? That's all underpinned by our beliefs and our mindset. And clearly I'm passionate about this. Listen to me go on, the energy levels are high. And it's, to me, that's as fundamentally important, is to understand your beliefs, because your beliefs show up in everything. They impact your family, the way they impact your business, the way they impact your health. and giving those equal weight to putting a sales funnel in place and getting your message out there, to me, they're as equally as important. And the ones who do the work on mindset and beliefs and peel those layers back to find the real truth as opposed to the perceived truth, they're the ones whose business soars.
Yeah, for sure. So I've got a bit of a random question that I'm just going to throw at you. So, and I'm asking this not just for myself, but because I see a lot of people around me struggling with the same thing. So we're going through life and we kind of are at that point that perhaps you were maybe 5 years ago, where shit just isn't really going to plan. We're feeling that we're in the wrong place. But we're also kind of beaten down a bit by life. And somebody says to us, it's easy, you just follow your passion. But how do you, and have you had a point in your life where you haven't really been able to connect to what you were passionate about? So in what I guess what I'm asking is, you know, in the talk of like creating a soul-led business, how do you connect to that part of your soul that knows what that soul-led business is?
It's an awesome question, because our head is telling us all the reasons why we can't do whatever our passions are generally. So our head, you know, we'll start thinking down a path, but then our head will be like, oh, you won't make any money out of that. Or, God, who's going to hire me to do that? Or, no, there's a million other people in that space. I'm not going to be able to build a sustainable business out of it. Or even things like, God, that if that takes off, it'll take me away from the kids. Yeah, so I better not start that. Yeah, it is. It's massive. Like, what does success actually mean? So there's two elements to that answer. The first one is that I totally believe in self-love actually opens up so many pathways to the heart. Now, that sounds, even as I said that sounds very, you know, wanky. But what I mean by that is when you actually start to respect yourself and value yourself, value your boundaries, value your time, value your place in the family, value your sleep, you know, putting those rather than doing everything for everybody else and saying, hang on, I'm worthy of doing some things for me that lift me up, that give me happiness, that give me joy, like taking time out to go to yoga and saying, look, this is a non-negotiable in my schedule, just as an example. Then when we start doing things that make us feel happier and more joyous, we actually have a clearer view of what our passions are, what our capabilities are, and what our opportunities are. And I'll give you an example. So my assistant, Joe, who has been with me, I think, for about 2 years now, and Joe has been with me from before I did the mindset work and profoundly changed my life in 2015 to now. And Joe is, she's just a gorgeous, giving character with two young kids who also happen to be named Indy and Mac, which coincidentally is the same name as my two youngest, Indy and Mac, spelt differently, but totally random. Joe used to be all about the kids. Like, she couldn't see how she could have a career that was fulfilling because it would take her away too much from the kids. Or she, you know, she couldn't see how things could happen because she's got to, you know, get the kids to sleep and show up for them the way she thinks a mother should show up. Now, recently, like, Joe came away to Bali with us and started to learn this art of self-love, and filling yourself up first actually means everything is easier. It's easier to be a parent. It's easier to see your gifts. It's easier to connect with people around you. She's had this business idea in her mind for a while, and she actually said to me the other day, I can see how this works now. I'm just more open to the world. I'm more open to the possibilities. So it seems like a bit of an odd connection, but allowing yourself to feel joy and be happy actually opens up your insight into what you truly care about and what you're passionate about, as opposed to what you should be doing. The other way is, you know, I have an awesome exercise that I have people go through called Finding Your Brilliance, because it's really easy to say, okay, this is what I could do in business because I'm really good at it, or I've done this for years, therefore, it would be easy to do this business. But that's not necessarily where your passion is, where your genius is, and where your happiness lies. So actually taking the time to separate out, hang on, what do I really love doing versus what am I really excellent at versus what I do now, but I don't, you know, it doesn't get my rocks off. And starting to break them out into different categories of things, then that allows you to start to see the different elements that you might want to bring together to make that happen. Does that help, that answer?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think that one of the other things that I've realized through, you know, my own search for purpose and meaning and happiness has been that that place of seeking is not the place of finding. You know, so when you're going around in life feeling like, you know, looking for something that's missing, it's like looking for the keys. You're never going to find them until you give up looking for them and focus on your, like what you were saying, like focus on you and what makes you happy, and coming back to, even if it is just as little as, okay, well, I'm going to commit to doing a yoga class every week because I love it. And this is the thing that has fallen off the radar. You know, I think you're so right. You have to be constantly showing yourself how much you dig yourself in order for you to figure it out, you know?
And also, I think extending what you were saying as well, like it's really hard to, or not really hard, but it can be hard to find that thing when you're stuck in the shit.
Totally.
And sometimes it's just about taking a step forward and not waiting for the perfect answer.
Yeah.
So,
yes.
I'll give you an example. So one of my clients, Loretta, who now works for me and is a really good friend, she built up a really successful big nursery and cafe and gift shop, sold it off, and did very well out of it after working very hard for many years. And so then she wanted to coach people because she'd been a teacher before they'd had the nursery. So her obvious step was to coach cafe owners how to grow their business and have profitable businesses and so forth. And she was doing that, and then one day her sister spoke to her about having a cafe. And Loretta was like, why would you own a cafe? It's exhausting and it's really hard to make money. And she was like, oh my God, if I don't believe in that having a cafe is the most, you know, wonderful thing in the world, even though I can coach people how to have a better cafe, why am I doing this? And so that realization of what is not for her is as powerful as what is for her. So by taking action, she got down the path and she got a massive insight into what elements of that she liked, but a big aha around, hang on, I want to be doing something that I believe in, you know, from dusk till dawn type thing. And she was able to shift sideways and focus more on helping women become, you know, have more joy and happiness in their life and have better connections to their husbands and that sort of thing, which was sort of stuff she was doing with her cafe owners as well as the business side of things. She would never have got to that point if she had have been looking at for that from the start, because she just couldn't see how she would get there.
Yeah,
it's only because she morphed down that cafe path and was doing that she was then able to see, oh, that's where my true passion is, and I can see how I can step into that. So taking the steps, not waiting for it to be perfect, just starting and taking the feedback on board and learning from that is such a big part of that building your business from the soul.
Totally, totally. When I started this podcast, I didn't know where that was going to lead. I think, you know, and I see this in my Radcasters students too a bit. Like, I think sometimes we're looking for like the total end game, and we can't take that first step until the total end game is revealed to us, you know. But if you do it the other way around, where you do follow your nose a bit, you know, nothing is permanent. That is one thing that is absolutely undeniable. Nothing is permanent. So any, you know, you can't not be on the right path. But you can, you know, you can change that path whenever you want.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And that's, you know, that's how I got to this place in my business. Like, I am now so clear on my life's purpose and my life's impact. But I was so far from that when I started the business 2 years ago or two and a bit years ago. I knew I wanted to coach people. I knew I wanted to be innovative in how I did that. I knew I wanted to make a greater impact. I didn't quite know what that was. And it was through doing it and trying things and going, okay, this doesn't work with this type of customer. That's just not doing it for me. I get to shift slightly. Oh, wow, this is fantastic. Yep, this is awesome. I get to lean into this more and understand what that is. Okay, and what's the breadth of that? Now I know the sort of general direction. And that's, you know, that's how our world keeps evolving and we get to this point. I do want to talk about, I hate, you know, green light checklists, project checklists that gives you the green light or the red light about whether you should go into a business or not, because it encourages people to follow the money. Following the money will maybe bring you in some money in the short term, but you won't build a sustainable long-term business. You won't have the passion and motivation for it that allows you to get up every day or to go to the extra mile or shout from the hilltops, this is how I can help you and this is what I do. To me, it's a shortcut to business failure, going, where's my project green light checklist?
For sure. Just in this the short conversation that we've had, it's pretty clear that the last 2 years have been instrumental. What do you feel like have been your key learnings through this time? What were the big shifts that kind of happened in your mindset that have taken you from where you were to where you are now? P.S. I just have to say, I totally love following you. Those videos that you post of you just like enjoying life are so fucking cool. So fucking cool. Do you feel like something has shifted in you, allowing you or giving yourself permission to do those things that perhaps wasn't there before?
Yes, absolutely, so much. What I'm really have noticed, what's been the big thing, is allowing joy and fun into my life and changing into every day, into the business days and that sort of thing, and changing my view on what work should look like. And this comes back to me not feeling like I was doing enough. Well, shouldn't a serious business person be at their desk from, you know, 9 till 6 at night and then get back on the computer after the kids are in bed? And shouldn't a serious business person show up this way and do this? When I actually started to go, well, hang on, when I allow more fun and self-love and happiness into my workday and things like going surfing or going hip-hop dancing or something like that, I actually am a much better business person, mum, partner, friend, because, you know, a bit like what I was talking about before, I'm more filled up and I'm more joyous about life. I can see more opportunities. So that's been a really big thing for me, is to go. And I think also coming from corporate and the corporate environments that I've been in, which have always been consulting, accounting, IT, you know, they're pretty straight environments, to go, hang on, work can look any way I want it to look. I can do whatever serves me. So if I want to go and do a coaching call sitting by the beach having a glass of wine, then why the fuck not? And the second piece that has come out of it is just to realize, and, you know, this is through the mindset work, is realize that I'm awesome just as I am.
Yeah.
I'm awesome with all the mistakes I've made because they've made me the person who I am. You know, I'm an awesome mum who's just doing her best every day like everybody else is. And I think in Australia in particular, we have a real challenge in saying I'm awesome just as I am and I love myself just as I am, because it's not, you know, it's not humble, it's not the done thing. But when I recognize that, hang on, I'm a really good person, and hang on, I'm doing amazing things for my kids, you know, we are, and all the things that I used to get so angry at myself for, I'd be like, fuck, Kirsten, how can you get to 40 and be practically fucking broke still with all the stuff you know? Yeah. Like, how is that possible? I was so angry at myself for so long. But, you know, to be able to go, well, actually that has changed me so much and made me the person I am today. And because I'm awesome as the person I am today, I've got to love all those falls and scrapes and missteps and, you know, when I've been a dick, and, you know, it's sort of made me who I am. So because I go, do you know what, I'm awesome just as I am, then that's when I became open to sharing everything. And just, you know, I'm really passionate about showing women that it's okay to cry and fall over. It's okay to be the worst in the yoga class. Like, I did yoga in Bali.
That was an awesome video.
And I landed on the floor. I fell over and landed on the floor so hard, and I was in such a big puddle of sweat. The girls were pissing themselves laughing at me because it was like I landed in a puddle. There was this massive thwack splash. And, you know, to go, that's okay. I'm having fun and I'm getting better every day. To show people that I'm just so passionate about showing people that we can have days where we go, oh, fucking hell, like, I'm kidding myself if I think I can do this. Who the hell do I think I am? You know, I'm not as good as those people around there. And that it's okay, and that it's just feedback, and we go, oh, and we have the tools to work through that and listen to what it's telling us. You know, that we can make mistakes and not charge ourselves enough or lose a deal because we were too attached to getting the money in the door, so we basically scared them off. That's all okay. So I show the fuck ups as well as my learnings, because I am so inspired to keep pushing myself as to what I can learn and what can I be open to and what can I do next and how can I see life differently, and to inspiring women that, hey, you can do this too. I'm just an ordinary mum who grew up in the country, who's got three kids, and, you know, they're all on the autism spectrum, so our life is fucking nuts. We can do it, you can do it. And totally. That's what I'm really passionate about as part of, you know, Radical Life.
Yeah, for sure. You know, what was coming through to me while you were talking right then is, you know, when you do make a change and do start to like yourself and allow yourself to love yourself and allow yourself to admit that you love yourself, then you're actually of greater service in the world than if you didn't. You know, I think we often don't do that because we're protecting people from the way they feel about themselves. But when we do show up in all of our glory with, you know, the shit, the sweat, the tears, then we also give permission for other people to do it. And that is a wonderful service to be offering as a human being to another human being. So I just really want to thank you for doing that, because I think it's so important. And I feel like we're two peas in a pod in that kind of respect. I'm also, you know, it's been a long journey of learning to like myself, because there have been periods where, you know, I've actually punched the mirror. I've been that angry at myself.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. I haven't gone there, but oh my God, I get it.
You know, and now I'm at this space where I don't like myself all the time, but I'm learning to be okay with who I am. You know, I don't have to love all the fuck ups that happen in my life. When I look back, I do, you know, like, you know, I had that Office Collective thing, which cost me $100,000 and a lot more bruised ego than the money. But now I look at it as like probably one of the single best things that ever happened to me. You know, it's just like, I don't know, it's just framing things differently. I'm not as hard on myself as I used to be, because I'm human, and that's awesome.
Yeah, and I agree, we're human, and there's also, you know, if you love yourself right now and go, actually, do you know what? I'm a pretty good person. I'm a pretty good mum. Mabel's doing well.
Yeah.
I'm having a beautiful impact on my clients. There's some amazing podcasts growing out there that are then having an impact on their audience.
Yeah.
If we can appreciate ourselves for who we are now, then we've got to love the past, because the past is, you know, what made us who we are right now.
For sure.
Time to kick up your feet and relax. It's On the Couch.
Biggest fear?
Fuck, Jesus, I just took a massive in-breath then, but my son will kill himself. Let me expand. All my three kids are on the autism spectrum, as I've mentioned, and my 11-year-old son tried to kill himself twice when he was 10, and because of the emotional pain and distress that he was in from his anxiety, from his Asperger's. So it wasn't because he was in depression, it was because he was not coping with the world in that point in time and wanted to end it. And it's sort of now been hardwired into him. A bit like, you know, when you get a fault in a computer system, how that glitch keeps coming up. It is my biggest fear that he will kill himself, but it's also, I have to say, one of my proudest things of how we have learnt to live with it is the wrong terminology, but have accepted our challenges as our gifts in our world and see the children for each of their own uniqueness rather than the deficits, and have gone on to have pretty cool, fulfilling lives without holding on to Toby so tightly that we nearly suffocated life out of all of us because we were holding on so tightly. That's a bit of a convoluted answer.
No, but I totally hear you. I totally hear you. I mean that, I don't have that specific fear, but I certainly have, my biggest fear is about losing the people around me that are the most important, you know. And, it's one of the scariest things because it's one thing that you can't control and eventually is going to happen. And that scares the shit out of me. So I totally hear you, you know, because especially it's even more real for you, you know. That's a fucking lot to deal with.
Yeah, it is. And it was absolutely horrendous and, you know, still some days is still like the conversations in our house are so like, you know, he'll say, "Mum, can you put the handcuffs on me? Can you put some handcuffs on me so I can't get out the fork and stab my arm?"
Yeah, right.
Now, that is, you know, that's, it's different than, say, a 15-year-old depressed kid saying those things. It's just in that moment, that's what his brain's telling him he needs for relief, is to kill himself and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, the conversations we have is really shit, but it's now part of our everyday conversation. It's part of our management of him. And, you know, what's been a massive achievement in our house is that he hasn't talked about killing himself for the last 6 weeks since he's been back at school, which is huge. And, you know, so him saying he's going to kill himself all the time, he's not trying to act on that all the time. So I don't want the audience to freak out.
Yeah.
You know, it becomes the verbal thing is very much a, you know, keep me safe type thing. So there's not the action there. So don't freak out, everybody. But, you know, this fear of loss that we have, like fear of loss of Toby, fear of loss of a loved one, fear of loss of the house, can cause us to hold on so tight that we lose sight of life, we lose sight of what's important. You know, I was literally afraid of letting him go in case he got away from me and, you know, I couldn't save him. But that meant that we lived in fear, anxiety, waiting for the crisis to happen all of the time. And that's no way to live a life. None of us were living. So when we actually said, hang on, you know, imagine showing Toby me living to my full capacity, to my full happiness, to my full thing of self-love. So, A, not only am I a most awesome parent, but B, he can see how that's possible for himself, that I'm showing him that's possible and I'm leading the way with him. Like, you know, when I said, okay, I'm going to take on that approach instead of the other approach, which is all about fear and loss and lack and scarcity and, you know, which so many of us live in, and that's what I'm feeding to the kids. And since I've changed my approach, God, the kids are doing so much better as well. And, you know, we all just live in a different plane of happiness and self-belief and capabilities and so forth.
Amazing. Oh, you are just truly an inspiring human being, I tell you.
Thank you.
So on that, kind of, I guess, would you see that as your biggest struggle? What do you struggle with?
No, I struggle with, my biggest struggle has been with myself and not thinking I'm good enough.
Yeah.
You know, I think I've had an ache in the tummy for probably the last 10 years of thinking that I'm not showing up the right way as a friend, or, you know, I should be doing more at the school, or, you know, I should be doing more in business. And that has really been, you know, not putting the family at jeopardy by following my passions, and that struggle within myself of not feeling like I'm good enough has probably defined my, you know, last 10 years, I would say. And people wouldn't know that from the outside. They go, oh, my God, you look like you've got your shit together. You're always the life of the party. You're such a big part of the community and that sort of stuff. But I was always doing that because I was trying to prove myself to be good enough. So that's been my biggest struggle, and I'm really, really proud of myself that I have moved through a lot of that. And like that onion that you talked about, it has been layer after layer after layer, and yeah. then it'd show up again. I'm like, fuck, that old chestnut's back again.
Yeah.
But I really feel like I've moved through that now, and it's only recently that I've gone, do you know what, I can totally let that go. I don't even need to say that old chestnut shows up. I can totally let that go, and I'm really excited about how that means I look at the business and opportunities and life and impact and all those sorts of things.
And failure, how do you define failure? You've obviously seen, like, you know, it from a bunch of different angles. So how do you define it?
Now I define it as the most awesome lessons in life. So what I was going to say is that I feel like there is no failure anymore. I feel like it's all lessons and feedback. Now, you know, if tomorrow we fell over and we lost everything, would I still think the same? I don't know, but as of today, I feel like failure is an awesome part of life because it gets us to where we are today. You know, you look at Loretta, you could have said that her pathway down the cafe thing was a failure. You know, she started pathway down the business and then stopped it, when actually it was the best win because it gave her so much insight into herself and who she wants to work with and what her true capabilities were. And there was amazing lessons out of that. Failure excites me.
Yeah. Yeah. I love a bit of good failure myself.
I love a bit of good failure. I love a bit of good hard failure.
Yeah. It's a reminder that, you know, we're human. But also I think we, as children, we learn through failing at things, and then in adulthood, for some reason, we think we shouldn't fail. But when we're learning, there is going to be – we're going to get shit wrong. It's how we learn. So, you know, I love a bit of failure.
Yeah, we've got to embrace it.
Totally. So on the flip side of that, how do you define success? What does that look like?
Do you know, I haven't asked myself that question in probably a few months, and, you know, things have been changing rapidly in my world. Success in my world, do you know what success is? It's when each day rolls in peace and flow.
Yeah.
And peace and flow means, you know, the business is feeling effortless, my message is coming through me, I'm working, like, you know, it's not, you know, I don't advocate this whole 4-hour work week and that sort of stuff. It's not that I'm having half a day off. Like, I love being in my business. I love the thrill and the excitement and the energy of it. But that it's, you know, that it's flowing easily. It doesn't feel like a struggle. That, you know, our home life is flowing. There's beautiful meals cooked in the fridge, and, you know, we get to have some quality time with the kids, and it's just feeling effortless. Those days, when I experience those days, which, you know, there's getting more and more, and there's not as much time in between them as I keep learning and growing, they're the ones where I'm like, wow, this is what life is about.
So two questions left. One is, you know, we all have that negative, evil bitch in our heads saying things on repeat. I know you've probably managed to dull yours down from a dull roar to maybe a whisper, but yep. What is it saying?
So what it's saying at the moment, oh, that's a really good question. What it's saying at the moment is, you're kidding if you're going to think you impact the world, because I've got dreams of impacting women across the world, and it's, that's too big for you.
Last question. This is a good one. Are you ready?
Go for it.
What does freedom mean, and what does it look like for you? How do you define it?
I tell you, I've pretty much got, I reckon my lifestyle of freedom right now is pretty awesome, because for me, freedom is making the choices that serve me. And so, you know, we've just sold up last year. We sold up everything and moved to the beach to live where we said, where do we want to live? And we picked there and we moved there. I get to travel the world and learn cool new things. You know, my husband's totally supportive. In 48 hours, I'm flying to Colombia, Bogota, Colombia, for 10 days to go into the jungle on a spiritual retreat to go, you know, further and further into the mind and the spirit and sort of get to the true raw me and hang with some of the most incredible entrepreneurs from around the world. To me, those things are freedom. Freedom to connect with the kids in the way that I want to and when I want to. Freedom from doing the things that I should be doing. So as mums, I think we're awesome at going, well, a mum should be cooking the meals or should be doing the shopping, which I think is a fucking load of bollocks.
Yeah, like, I don't do either of those.
No, exactly. Like Flick, my cook's here today. She sends us through the menu and, you know, cooks all the beautiful, healthy, tasty meals for the week. To me, that's freedom. And people will say, well, yeah, you've got lots of money. You can afford to have that freedom. And the answer is no, I don't have lots of money. I have made those choices that's how I want to live and have made them a priority and then have worked to make them happen.
The plug. Instead of filling the podcast with self-promotion, we're being totally transparent. Here's the plug.
Well, my body's for sale. No,
I'm buying.
HotKirsten.com. No, kidding. So where you can go and find me is go and check out radical.life. So the website is actually radical.life because I love inspiring women to that they can go and live their radical life. And on the homepage there, you'll find something that I think your audience might really enjoy, which is a diagnostic that shows whether you're a business wannabe or a business rock star. Like, where do you actually fall and how can you change it up so you can become a business rock star? So go to radical.life. My intent for that that community on radical.life is that it's the go-to resource for the audience who is looking to build that sole business, who's looking to get the trust in themselves, to learn how to self-love. You know, we give away so much information and knowledge on there because I want it to be an easy step. I want you guys just to go, I can do this. Here's some things helping me. And, you know, if I hear from you guys and say, well, thank you for that video or whatever you inspired me to do this, they're my happy days.
Yeah, totally. Wow. Totally.
The takeaway, exercises or tips for positive change, sprinkled with salt and vinegar, wrapped in newspaper and handed over the counter from our special guest to you.
So capitalising on what we talked about today, I think the takeaway today, number one priority is love yourself first. Give yourself the space, give yourself the time to do the things that make you a better person, whether it's read a book, watch a movie with a friend, do some exercise, put boundaries in place with your kids, whatever it is, love yourself first and then everything else becomes so much easier after that.
Totally. Thanks.
Beautiful.
Thanks for tuning in to the Carlosophies podcast with me, Carly Nimmo. Let's continue the conversation at carlynimmo.com. If you were a big fan of the podcast, I'd be stoked if you left a review. And if you want to hear more radness just like this, be sure to subscribe and spread the word. In the meantime, be real, be rad. Peace out.